At its best, science fiction is a kind of partner to science fact, building on what we know to allow us to dream about what is possible. As astronomers continue to reach into deep space and gain new knowledge about the origins of the universe and even where its borders might be, science fiction writers are right there with them. Hilton Lewis is the director of the W.M. Keck Observatory on the summit of Mauna Kea. He's bringing a speaker to Hawaii who's worked at the intersection of science, fact, and fiction, 2017 Nobel Prize laureate Kip Thorne, and he's on the line to tell us about it. Hilton, good morning.
Good morning to you, Chris.
You know, I was wondering how many astronomers today were maybe drawn into their field by science fiction. Did you get excited by science fiction when you were a kid?
You know, I would guess that every single one had some connection with science fiction. And yes, certainly I was fascinated by it. But I have to tell you, modern science is even more amazing than the science fiction we read about.
That's what it. That's the way it seems, especially as you get deeper and deeper into space.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the things that we take for granted today, you know, black holes, for example, they were barely theories when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And they certainly were the subject of a lot of science fiction.
What is a black hole, while we're on the subject?
Well, it's a extreme bending of space-time, and it's so extreme, and its gravity is so strong that not even light can escape from it. So basically, you have a location in space that appears completely black.
As you said, the bending of space-time, not just space, not just time, but space-time as a unit.
That's correct. The big realization that Einstein brought to us was that space and time are inextricably linked. And so in the vicinity of a black hole, which forms when a massive star collapses, both time is slowed down tremendously and space is warped to the point, as I said, where light itself cannot escape, and nor can anything else.
And isn't that warping that something that Einstein postulated long before it was proven? Is that an accurate description?
That's right. I mean, Einstein was the first person to come up with an actual explanation of what gravity is. Newton explained how it worked, but didn't have a real understanding of what it is. And so Einstein came up with this postulate that it was this warping of space and time that we experienced as gravity.
That whole idea of warping of space and time, it's the kind of amazing intellectual leap that Einstein, among others, has been able to make. But it fascinates me that Einstein, for example, worked very much from his imagination as much as he did from calculation. Yeah,
I think so. You know, I've read that the calculational aspect, you know, the equations, that's the way you understand what you're thinking about, but that doesn't actually give you the fundamental insight. And this is true of all of physics, you know, quantum mechanics, relativity. You really have to have an incredible imagination to be able to come up with a theory in the first place. And then the calculation links it to what you actually see in the real world, to the experimental evidence.
The whole idea of use of the imagination kind of leads us back to science fiction, doesn't it, in the sense that, in part, a scientist kind of needs to dream a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I think, the picture or the image that people have of scientists scrawling equations on blackboards and walking around in lab coats is actually very different. Science itself is this intensely human experience. You know, it's full of big egos, and some people have to die before science can advance. So it's just like any other field: competition, excitement, dreaming, and in the end, of course, but it's very disciplined. It has a way of reviewing its results, and everything has to be borne out by experimental evidence. And I think that's the amazing thing about something like black holes. I mean, you could speculate about them, but in fact, the actual evidence of our own eyes and our own instrumentation shows us that they are the right description of what's happening in nature.
At the Keck, you've got an almost unparalleled ability to look far away into deep, deep space. And by doing so, you're looking into the far distant past, aren't you?
That's right. I mean, light travels at a finite speed. And so the farther away something is, the longer it takes for light from that object to reach your eyes. And In fact, the most distant objects we view at Keck, light has been traveling across the universe for over 13 billion years. You know, the Earth is only 5 billion years old, so that's a tremendous look back in time. You're seeing things as they were 13 billion years ago.
It also, though, conversely, it makes it impossible to know if those things still exist, right?
Oh, well, now we're getting into philosophy.
Yes, we are.
of course, we know things like the ages of stars by studying them. And so many of the things we observe today have long since, if it's a star, it will have exhausted its fuel and maybe collapsed into a black hole or a neutron star or something like that. So some of the things we see actually no longer exist.
Well, that intersection of science and philosophy that you just mentioned, that's really what fires the great science fiction writers who seem to almost move in and out of the world of science fact. I'm thinking of people like Isaac Asimov's Arthur C. Clarke, where in some ways hasn't the work kind of informed real science?
Yeah, there's a feedback loop. I think the great science fiction writers can dream in ways that, well, first of all, inspire future scientists, and also can illuminate possibilities. But I wouldn't think that science is actually directly driven by science fiction. It's perhaps some technology a little bit, but the reality is it's more an inspiration than an actual direction. I wouldn't claim that anything Arthur C. Clarke ever wrote resulted in an actual science discovery.
More in the but as you said, as a source of inspiration, and I think one of the things that you're emphasizing this morning is just the role of imagination, of dreaming, allowing your mind to go freely into speculation about the universe.
That's right. It's a license in a way. I think what you're seeing in modern science is very much the same as you see in many fields of human endeavor. There's this cross connection between culture and philosophy and language and science. It's part of the whole human experience. It's what enriches us, and it's what actually makes us human. And underlying all of this, regardless of the field you're talking about, is this intense curiosity that really defines us as a species.
It worries me sometimes that maybe young people whose inclination is toward the imagination and the arts might not readily embrace science, maybe not understanding the role that imagination plays in science like yours.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the richness of our environment actually probably will overcome that. I mean, people see fantastic movies that depict science and science fiction. They see the adventure that we all experience when NASA launches a probe or people go up in spacecraft. So I think there are many ways to keep the young people engaged in the excitement and the thrill of science, actually. So I'm a little more optimistic than you are.
Well, I'm not that pessimistic. I certainly think that when you hear of a real advance, a discovery being made, it has to be incredibly exciting.
That's right, and of course they are. I think perhaps the bigger challenge is how do we not how do we attract people to science, but how do we actually do the hard work that results in people going into STEM fields. And of course, science is only one manifestation of, pure science is only one manifestation of this area. So I think the challenges in our schools, the challenges in exposing our kids to these opportunities. And that's actually something that we at Keck believe a great deal in, because we want to give back to the community. You know, we recognize our fundamental support comes from people in our community, across the nation, across the world. And so it's a very important part of our mission to give back. And the way of giving back is, of course, to excite young minds.
Well, let's hope that process continues. And thanks very much for talking with us. Hilton Lewis is the director of the W.M. Keck Observatory on the summit of Mauna Kea. It will present a free astronomy talk by theoretical astrophysicist Dr. Kip Thorne, executive producer of the film Interstellar and a recipient of the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physics, to describe how he helped turn science fact into science fiction. That public talk will be held this Friday, January 5th, at the Mount Lowney Bay Hotel.